This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Now on to a disaster across the globe and the attendant mixed messages.
It's been 10 days since the quakes toppled tens of thousands of buildings across Turkey and Syria.
The skies over Turkey are continuously pierced with the sound of helicopter blades, still performing crucial search and rescue.
The window for finding people alive is closing fast.
Of what Turkey has described as the biggest catastrophe of the century.
The magnitude 7.8 quake was the strongest that Turkey, perched atop fault lines, had endured in over 80 years. But still, the horrific, ever-rising death toll demanded accountability, or at least the appearance thereof.
Earlier today, the justice minister in Turkey said the detainment warrants had been issued for 134 people that the government suspects of potentially being responsible for shoddy construction that could have led to the loss of life.
The government has vowed to punish anyone responsible, but critics say Turkey's construction codes are rarely enforced.
Political pressure is building on President Tayyip Erdogan over his handling of the crisis. The head of Defense Minister, Hulusi Akar, admitted that after 2 days, only 7,500 soldiers have been deployed in an area that encompassed 10 large cities.
Some critics say the worst offense, however, was the initial delay in rescue efforts. The first few days after can be the most crucial for survival.
My sister and her family live in Antakya, and Antakya is one of the worst hit cities in the country. It's on the southern border with Syria.
Ganul Tol, founding director of the Middle East Institute's Turkey program, was on the ground in Turkey last week.
A few hours after the earthquake hit, the entire city had leveled to the ground, and my sister's in-laws remained trapped under the rubble. So my sister and her family and her husband tried to dig them out with their bare hands. When they finally did pull out their father, there was a concrete block on his leg, so they needed equipment to be able to lift that concrete block. My family waited for 48 hours for the rescue workers, and when they finally did arrive, they told us that they could not help us because they had received instructions to focus their rescue work elsewhere.
He died?
He died.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
When your family was told, "We can't do this right now, we have other orders," what were their orders?
Well, one of them told us that they were looking for an address that belonged to the family members of a member of parliament from Istanbul. This is just a symptom of a larger problem, which is a centralization of power.
Cast your mind back to 1999. Turkey had another shattering earthquake. It killed over 18,000 people. Erdogan campaigned on a platform of solving all the problems that had caused the government to respond so sluggishly. He would wipe away corruption and collusion between business and government. He'd rebuild the economy. But what did he actually accomplish in the 20-plus years?
Not much. You're right. He blamed all the ills of the 1990s on widespread corruption, dysfunctional governments, and unresponsive state institutions. And he promised things would change radically. And many people believed him. He comes from an Islamist background, and yet social democrats voted for him, liberals voted for him, not just the conservatives. But Erdogan hollowed out state institutions, wiped out most vibrant civil society organizations, and basically enriched his cronies to create a small circle of loyalists around him. In the 1990s, my country had many problems, and yet we did have institutions. And now none of those institutions are there.
Throughout the 2010s, Erdogan was on a construction spree, counting on all of this building to inflate the economy, which it did, at least temporarily, more jobs, more manufacturing, much of this to replace the buildings that fell in 1999. You say that the people who benefited most from this building over the long haul were a small circle of friends from the construction sector?
That's right. By awarding them all infrastructure projects without competitive tenders or proper regulatory oversight. And these companies embarked on a massive building spree, constructing in earthquake hotspots without following proper building codes. In Hatay, for instance, that's where my sister and her family lives. One of the areas hardest hit by Monday's earthquake, residential buildings, hospitals, and even the local branch of the Turkish Disaster and Emergency Management Presidency, all built by Erdogan's cronies, they were either leveled to the ground or suffered massive damage. The town's only airport, built on top of a fault line by a company close to tied to Erdogan, it was split in two by the earthquake.
Are you saying that a lot of the buildings that fell were the newer buildings and older buildings were left standing?
That's partly true. According to experts and some state agencies, 51% of the buildings that collapsed in Monday's earthquake, they were built after Erdogan came to power. But old buildings collapsed too, because Erdogan oversaw a sweeping amnesty program that forgave faults in millions of buildings.
What is an amnesty for a building?
It means it should be demolished.
Ah.
And yet Erdogan granted them an amnesty and they were allowed to stand.
I see. What about inspection companies? Weren't they sent around to check these places out?
Well, in Hatay, many of these inspection companies belong to these construction companies to inspect their buildings.
You've written about the Turkish Disaster and Emergency Management Presidency, otherwise known as AFAD. It should have been instrumental in coordinating the relief effort. You say that it entirely was not.
Can you imagine you are the main disaster and emergency management agency in a country like Turkey, which is prone to earthquakes and natural disasters, and yet you do not have a tent? Your budget is much smaller than the budget of the Directorate for Religious Affairs, and the person who is in charge is graduated from Department of Theology, and he has no previous experience in disaster management.
Why him?
Well, that's the story of Erdogan's Turkey. That's what he does. He put loyalists in key positions, and this is the result.
Mm-hmm. One thing I'm curious about is the earthquake tax that was introduced in the aftermath of the 1999 quake. Homeowners pay it every year, along with their property taxes. 1999 was a long time ago. By now, that fund should have been valued in billions.
That's right.
Where did the money go?
$38 billion in earthquake tax. Hmm. And yet, we don't know what happened to that money.
Did anybody ask Erdogan?
Of course. Opposition parties, journalists, experts, they're all asking the same question. What happened to our earthquake tax money, and we haven't received an answer.
With thousands still buried under the rubble, he seems to be very busy spinning a narrative that this was an inevitability, a huge, unprecedented earthquake bound to kill on a mass scale, that it was impossible to prepare for a disaster like this. How is he getting that message out?
From the early hours, that's what his government was doing, trying to push the narrative that this was the disaster of the century, that no government in the world could have responded to this earthquake. Yes, powerful earthquakes kill people, but they're more deadly in countries like Turkey, where the interests of a corrupt few are prioritized above all else. So this is not a natural disaster. This is a man-made disaster.
After the earthquake hit, you say he neglected to dispatch troops or rescue agencies, but he did work on a video.
Yes, it was the presidency's communications directorate that prepared it. It was a very clumsily made video. Some of the experts that he included in that video came out later and said that their words had been manipulated. They all accept that this is a huge tragedy, that this is a huge disaster. But no one is saying that the government could not have helped.
So what does a well-constructed response to the earthquake look like?
There are things that you have to do before the earthquake hits. And the number one priority should be to construct stronger buildings, to direct the builders to follow the regulations, safety codes, and building codes. And also, you have to empower the very institutions that are in charge of responding, put people with the necessary background in charge of those institutions. So those are the things that you should be doing before the earthquake hits. And then there are things that you must do after the earthquake hits. And that is, Turkey has the second largest army in NATO. So the president should have dispatched the military. If there were Turkish troops on the ground helping the victims, taking part in search and rescue efforts, the death toll would not have been this high.
When he was first elected, did you have any hope in his governance?
I did, because the 1990s, it was a lost decade. I was young at the time, but I remember how unstable the country was at the time, and all political parties were corrupt. So here came a politician who promised that he would do away with corruption, rebuild stronger, more responsive institutions. He would push hard for Turkey to become a more democratic, more prosperous country, an EU member country. So he said all the right things, and I believed him.
Gonul, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Gonul Tol is the founding director of the Middle East Institute's Turkey program and author of the book Erdogan's War, A Strong Man's Struggle at Home and in Syria.